We're now in the 15th month on this topic. And our theme today is Mary, Queen and Mother of the Divine Will, Model and Teacher. Our theologians and popes have used the most exalted terms to describe the holiness of our Blessed Mother. For example, that her holiness exceeded the holiness of all the angels and saints put together, even at the first moment of her life. But now, we have Jesus telling us, and here I'm selecting my passages from volume 17 and 19 that are on our book table here. He says, our greatest prodigy was that in each of her thoughts, words, breaths, heartbeats, movements, steps, our volition, meaning will, poured itself out upon her, and she offered us the heroism of an eternal divine heartbeat working in her. This elevated her so much that what we are by nature, God, he says, she is by grace. That's a big expression. I don't think you fully understand that. All her other prerogatives, her privileges, her Immaculate Conception itself would have been nothing in comparison to this great prodigy. Moreover, this was what confirmed her, made her stable and strong during her entire life. My continuous will poured itself in her, made her a participant in the divine nature. Her continuous reception of it made her strong in love, strong in sorrow, and different from everyone. It was our will operating in her that drew the eternal word to earth and formed the seed of the divine fruitfulness so that a God-man could be conceived without human participation. This made her worthy of being mother of her very own Creator. Now in volume 19, Jesus describes the fullness of the divine life that Mary possessed. She possessed the fullness of the divine will and such unity with the divine will that there was never any shadow of difference, but always fullness of daylight. He said, in each instant, this unity of the light of my will made flow in her all the divine life which brought her seas, that means oceans, of beauty, glory, love, and she, as in triumph, brought her Creator all these seas as her own to witness to her love that she possessed so much of, namely her love for him and her adoration, and to make him fall in love with her beauty. She possessed so much love that as co-natural, in other words from the Holy Spirit, she could love for everyone. She could love for everyone, adore, supply for everyone. Her little acts done in the unity of its light were superior to the greatest acts and all the acts of all creatures together. In other words, he's showing all her virtues, every time she was humble, every time that she was patient, loving, obedient, and all the other virtues, was greater than any of the actions of all other creatures together. So the sacrifices, works, the love of all other creatures can be called little flames before the sun, little drops of water before the sea, in comparison to the acts of the Sovereign Queen. Now, in the book that I have on the table, too, Virgin Mary, the Kingdom of the Divine Will, we're finding what the Lord say, or Our Lady is saying here. At her conception, the divinity, she said, gifted me with divine reason, and having moved all of creation to festivity, he made me be recognized by all created things as their queen. They recognized the life of the divine will in me, and the whole universe prostrated itself at my feet, though I was tiny, and yet born, and singing hymns to me. The sun cheered me and smiled with its light. The sky, the stars, the falling and rising peacefulness of the sea delighted her. In a word, there was no created thing that did not unite itself to smile, to the feast of the Most Holy Trinity. Everything accepted my dominion, my rule, my command. After so many centuries, when Adam maybe lost the command, dominion of being king of the world, they felt honored because they found in me their queen, and all creation proclaimed me queen of heaven and earth. What did the divine, the Latin word is fiat, may it be done. What did the divine, may it be done, what did it not give me? It gave me everything. Heaven and earth were in my power. I felt myself ruler of everything and even of my own creator. In other words, her will was in perfect agreement with the divine will, so that what she might ask or command was what God wished. What we're getting here is a heavenly Mariology. Lord is telling us what was not seen, and what theologians have tried to tell us, but the Lord is telling us what actually happened. Now, her exterior life, this is our Blessed Mother talking about it, this is volume 14. My exterior life is so ordinary, and I do less than most other people do. And Jesus added, she appeared to have done less than others. She lowered herself to perform the most ordinary acts of life. She made thread, she sewed, swept the floor, lit the fire, and who would have thought that she was the Mother of God? But when she carried me in her womb, encompassing within herself the eternal Word, every one of her movements, every human act of hers was adored by all creation. From her proceeded life and the support of all creatures. The sun depended on her, expected from her the sustenance of its light and heat, the earth the unfolding of the life of its plants. Everything depended on her. Heaven and earth were attentive to the slightest of her movements. But who saw any of this? Nobody. All her greatness, power, holiness, immense oceans of goodness that came from her interior, every one of her heartbeats, her breaths, her thoughts, her words, all went straight to her Creator. Well, if you want to look at a phenomenon that we face every day, the biggest miracle that we have every day is the consecration, the Mass. Is it any different after the words? It's still a host. Looks like bread. But it isn't. See? We believe that it is the body and blood of Christ. Jesus describes how the interchange between Mary and God were constant. In other words, currents of love, thanksgiving, adoration, praise, and so on. These currents enhanced her greatness, elevated her, made her overcome everything. Yet no one was aware of anything unusual in her. Only I, her God, her Son, was aware of everything. There was such a strong current between my mother and I that her heart and mine beat in unison. She lived in my eternal heartbeat, and I lived supported by her maternal heartbeat. Because of this, our lives were blended together to the point of fusion. It was precisely this that distinguished her before me as my mother. Now, Luisa could not have written this. The theological terms involved here even defy theologians. And they did say there are things that we did not understand immediately. We had to think, but we could not find it would contradict our faith, that God could do it. Now we're going to take the stages of her life. What we're doing here now is giving you her stature and why she truly is the model of the divine will and her credentials. From volume 17, I've taken this. From the first instant of her conception, God asked of Mary the sacrifice of her will. And then Jesus said, without losing an instant and knowing the total intensity of the sacrifice that she made, she gave us her will without ever wanting to recognize it again. And we made her the gift of our will. And in this exchange, donation of wills, there flowed all the merits, beauties, prodigies, immensities of grace in the Immaculate Conception of the most privileged of all creatures. Our greatest prodigy was that in each of her thoughts, words, breaths, heartbeats, movements, steps, our volition poured itself out upon her, and she offered us the heroism of an eternal divine heartbeat working in her. This elevated her so much that what we are by nature, she is by grace. You have to think about that. See, she's not God, because God created her. That answer the question immediately. But other than that, she is the next thing to being God. My continuous will poured itself in her, made her a participant in the divine nature. Now, St. Peter said that in his epistles, that by grace we participate in the divine nature. And the Lord is saying only it's, you know, a billion times greater in Our Lady. It made her strong in love and sorrow and different from everyone. I already gave you that quotation. Now, Jesus speaks of Mary being conceived in the center of the infinite seas of God's power, the Son's wisdom, and the Holy Spirit's love. As soon as she was created, he said, she wanted to give her embraces and to reciprocate her love, her kisses, and the enjoyment that came from her innocent smiles. As soon as she was conceived, I gave her the use of reason and endowed her with all the sciences. Now think of that, all the sciences. I permitted her the use of her to know our joys and our sorrows concerning creation, namely when creation failed, when Adam failed and all creation was punished because of him. From the moment she first existed in her mother's womb, she would come to heaven to the foot of our throne and give us embraces, the reciprocation of her love and her tender kisses. Throwing herself in our arms, she would smile at us with such gratitude and thanksgiving as to steal away our smiles. We allowed her to do so. Enjoying the love with which she ravished us made her queen of heaven and earth. Heaven and earth exalted made Mary together with us for finally having a queen after so many centuries. And then at Jesus' birth, and from volume 17, Jesus describes, the act of being born was the most solemn act of all creation. Heaven and earth felt themselves prostrate in profound adoration at the sight of my little humanity, which kept my divinity as though in a prison. There was an act of silence, profound adoration and prayer. My mother prayed, remained enraptured by the force of the prodigy that came forth from her. All creation felt the force of the love of my creative power renewed in them. Everyone felt honored and received the true honor because the one who created them needed them to care for his humanity. He needed the warmth of the animals and the warmth of Our Lady, Joseph. Now, their life together, I put it this way, Mary united with Jesus in all his actions. From volume 14. Jesus is describing what it takes to achieve holiness. He said that it's based on creating a likeness between himself and the soul. And he added, I did this with my mother. I did not exempt her from participation in even the slightest sorrow, nor any act or good work which I did. One will united us, so that when I suffered the deaths, sorrows, or acted, she died, suffered, and acted together with me. Her soul had to be a faithful copy of myself, so that when I looked upon her, I found another me. How about the answer to somebody saying, all we need is Jesus, we don't need Mary. She takes us away from him, and Our Lady's a perfect imitation of him. So here we have that confirmation that our Blessed Mother was the most faithful imitator of Jesus. Now, again, he's speaking about his union with his mother in all his life on earth. He said, how sweet was the company of my inseparable mother in my will. Companionship in labor generates happiness, satisfaction, tender love, loving competition, harmony, and heroism. Isolation, on the other hand, produces just the opposite effects. When my mother and I worked together, we both released seas of happiness and satisfaction, seas of love, which as if in competition with each other, evolved and unfolded into each other, producing great heroism. These seas did not surge only for us. They were for all those who had accompanied us in the divine will. What's more, these seas were transformed into a multitude of voices calling man to live in our will in order to restore his happiness, his nature, as it was originally, and all the possessions that man had lost when he withdrew from our will. And Jesus wanted to add Louisa's cooperation in this plan by her complete surrender to live in the divine will, and thus place a third seal upon his plan to finally restore man in future generations to the original happiness in which he was created, as well as the state of beauty and self-assurance he then possessed. Now let's look at Our Lady's sufferings with Jesus. No one can describe the sorrows and sufferings of our Blessed Lady better than she herself. She says, "The mere thought that my Son, my God, my life, must die is more than death for your mother. Yet I know that I must live. What agony! My heart is torn, immense oceans of sorrow overwhelm me. I feel my life fade from me, or the atrocious agony. If the divine fiat had not sustained me, and had not continued the course of his infinite oceans of light, joy, and happiness alongside the seas of my bitter pains, I would have died as many times for as many pains as my dear son suffered. How I agonized when, for the last time, he appeared to me pale with deathly sadness on his face, and he said to me, 'Goodbye, mother. Bless your son. Give me the obedience to die. Your divine fiat and mine made me be conceived, and your divine fiat and mine now must make me die. Say to me, I bless you, I give you the obedience to die crucified.' This is what the eternal will wants, and this is what I want too." Jesus saying that. Have you ever heard words like that? In us, there did not exist compulsory pains, Our Lady is talking here. But all were voluntary. All were voluntary. So we blessed each other, and exchanging that gaze which knows not how to separate any more from his beloved object, my dear son left, meaning after 30 years in Nazareth, he left. And I, your sorrowful mother, let him go. Yet the eye of my soul never lost sight of him. I followed him in the garden. Now she's talking about the Passion. And in his tremendous agony, and how my heart bled, I agonized with him, and I sustained him in my maternal arms. I was inseparable from my son. His pains reflected themselves in my heart, melted by sorrow and by love. I followed him all night long. There was neither pain nor accusation that they made to him which did not resound in my heart. I heard the shower of the blows that rained upon the naked body of my son, the mocking satanic laughter, the blows that they inflicted on his head with thorns. I felt my ears deafened by the cry of the mob, "Crucify him, crucify him." As Jesus took up his cross, exhausted, breathless, the cruel soldiers jerked him with ropes, made him fall. And Our Lady said, "What an agonizing pain it was not to be able to help my dear son. Every pain opened an ocean of sorrows in my transfixed heart." And I'm adding this, and when Jesus dies among the unheard of agonies, all of nature mourned, cried over the death of its creator. Everything lost its cheerfulness, and it felt terror and fears. In Mary's aching arms and the intense sorrow, terribly disfigured, Jesus is to be enclosed in the sepulcher. And at that point, Our Lady said, "He is the true portrait of the evils which the human will inflicts on poor creatures. Every pain of Jesus, every sorrow of mine, call the human will to rise into the divine will." In other words, return that free will that God gave you to me. Our love was such that to bring this human will to safety, we filled it with our pains, unto drowning it and enclosing it in the immense oceans of my pains and those of my beloved son. Our Lady now describes what happened immediately after Jesus died. "My dear son descended into limbo as conqueror and herald of glory and of happiness in that prison where there were found all the patriarchs, prophets, the first father, Adam, dear Saint Joseph, my holy parents, and all those who in virtue of the foreseen merits of the future Redeemer were saved. I was inseparable from my Son, so in the ardor of my sorrows I followed him into limbo and was spectator of the feast and the thanksgivings which all that great multitude of people gave to my Son. His first step was to beatify them and take them with him into the heavenly glory. As he died, conquests and glory began for Jesus and for all those who loved him. I'd like to add a little thought here that was given to me some time ago by one of the sisters at Holy Family. It was a little poem written by one of the sisters. It was describing how all the patriarchs of the past, Moses and David and Elijah, and all waiting for Jesus to come. They're all jabbering to each other and say, what are we going to do when he comes? How shall we greet him? And over the corner, there was an elderly man just sitting alone, didn't add anything to the conversation. And so they were talking and waiting, what'll we do? And all of a sudden, bam, big burst of light right in the midst of all of them, and they're all dumbfounded. There isn't a word they could say. And the elderly gentleman came over to Jesus and said, how are you, son? How's our mother? Oh. It was Joseph. And just a little thought about how it might have been, you know. So now Our Lady describes what followed. She said, I saw my dear son accompanied by that great multitude of people come out of limbo in an act of triumph and went to the sepulcher. All of nature now rejoiced. Before he rose, he showed to that multitude of people his most holy humanity, bleeding, wounded, disfigured, as it had been reduced from for their love and for love of all. Everyone was deeply moved, admired the love and great miracle of the redemption. Now, I'm describing here what followed is a description of Jesus' resurrection as witnessed by our Blessed Mother. She says, how majestic he was, his divinity united to his soul, made oceans of light and of enchanting beauty come forth, filling heaven and earth. As conqueror, making use of his power, he commanded his dead humanity to receive his soul again and to rise triumphantly and gloriously to immortal life. What a solemn act! My dear Jesus triumphed over death, saying, death, you will no longer be death but life. Now Our Lady points out why Jesus and she endured so much pain, poverty, and humiliation. She said, in all this, the divine will flowed. It was the life of our pains, and we felt triumphant and conquerors, changing death into life. So much so that, seeing the great good that came from it, we voluntarily offered ourselves to suffer. With the divine will in us, no one could impose upon it, nor upon us. Suffering was in our power, and we called it the nourishment and the triumph of redemption, bringing every good to the entire world. Now, in her assumption, Jesus said, it is my will which is celebrated on the feast day of my mother's assumption into heaven. Did you think of it in that way? In other words, that it's a festivity for Jesus' divine will, not only Our Lady. It was my will alone that made my most holy mother ascend so high and distinguishes her among everyone. It was my will that made her mother of the Word, made her see and embrace all creatures together, making her mother of everyone, and loving everyone with a mother's love, making her queen of everyone. On that day, my will received the first honors for the glorification of its work in my dearest mother. Everyone in heaven glorified, blessed, praised the eternal will when they saw the sublime queen all circumfused by the eternal Son of the supreme will enter the heavenly court. That word circumfused, first of all, around, fused means bring together. So in other words, Our Lady was brought into such a close union that I don't think you've ever heard that word, but it's a combination of two words, but they explained themselves. They saw that there had not been in her the least heartbeat in which this fiat, in other words, may it be done as I wish, had not been imprinted. Astonished, they all said, ascend, ascend to the highest place. All of heaven was saying this. It is just that she who has so much honored the supreme fiat, and by means of whom we are found in heaven, should have the highest throne, and that she be our queen. The greatest honor that my mother received was seeing glorified in her the divine will. From her book, Faith, Hope, and Charity, I'm quoting this. Jesus describes the scene when Mary entered heaven. The first song that they sang to my mother was the Hail Mary. How about that? Did you ever hear something like that? Because the Hail Mary contains the most beautiful praises and the greatest honors, and it renews the joy she had in being made Mother of God. So that should build up your esteem for the Hail Mary, even though you say 50 times in the rosary. Or what? 150 times if you say all the 15 decades. Now Jesus invited Louisa to recite it with him to honor our Blessed Lady. And Louisa said, when she recited the first part of the Hail Mary with Jesus, she found it very tender and moving to greet our Blessed Mother with Jesus in this way. She said that every word Jesus said contained an immense light in which many things were understood about our Blessed Mother. Isn't that true about each one of us too? You hear a sentence in the Gospels, you've heard it, what? How many Masses have you gone to? How many hundred times have you heard that one word or that phrase? Then this day is like a big 15,000 watt bulb goes on in your brain. You say, wow. Or all of a sudden the thought hits you, you're looking at the host and you're saying, yeah, I believe. In other words, it's not just bread. See, a light goes on. That's the heavenly light. Well, here's something on Our Lady's unique holiness from volume 15, page 52. Jesus explains why he chose Mary and why he endowed her with so many glorious privileges. He said, the greater the work that I want to accomplish, the more necessary it is that the creature I choose be unique and singular. The work of redemption was the greatest, and I chose one creature alone, endowing her with all the gifts that had never been granted on anyone, to ensure that this creature would be so full of grace as to become my mother, and to deposit in her all the graces of the redemption. Think what that means. All the graces of the redemption. That means, first of all, the payment for all the sins of mankind, to open heaven, to grant us all the graces of the sacraments, especially the Eucharist, to safeguard my gifts from the moment she was conceived up to when she conceived me. I kept her concealed in the light of the Most Holy Trinity, who was her guardian and who had the task of directing her in everything. Then, when I was conceived in her virginal womb, being the true chief priest and first among priests, I undertook the duty of protecting her, directing her in everything, even each of her heartbeats. Now, Jesus ends by saying that when he died, he entrusted her to another priest, John. He did all this because she was so privileged a soul, so full of all grace and unique in both the mind of God and in history. He added that he never did this for any other soul, because no one possessed so many gifts of grace, and no one else merited such protection and assistance. And then this, she's queen and mother of the divine will. In volume 14, page 52, it's like the Lord is presenting her credentials. And he says, as soon as I was conceived in my mother's womb, my mother began to interweave herself into my acts. Since my humanity had no life, no nourishment, purpose, other than the will of my Father, she too had no other purpose than my Father's will. The will of the Father flowed through everything and made me, constituted me as an act of every creature to restore it to the Father on behalf of all creatures, his rights as creator, to give me to all creatures as their light. So too my mother, restored to the Father, high rights as creator on behalf of all creatures. And she gave herself to creatures received, she gave of herself to creatures, received my acts and those of my mother as their life. In heaven she embraces all the glory of each creature, and my will gives her so much glory on behalf of each one that there's no glory which she does not contain, nor is there any glory that does not descend from her. This is language that you'd have to say is in the super stratosphere. She's describing, in other words, things that have go on in God, and we've had some of that already. In other words, Jesus is saying, when I give you the gift of my will, then you're one step higher than just sanctifying grace. You are in me. Now, to be in him, then we enter into his, what we call, timeless level. See? That's why we can pray then with all creatures, with the Lord, in his will. This is what we call a theology. By the way, this is not new in that I'm giving you the first time. This is about 95 years old. Theologians have looked into this. And it's a theology that you don't get in the seminary because the Lord didn't reveal it then. And so now we're getting this, and it doesn't contradict what God can do. See, in other words, you don't have to be flying all over the universe, but you are entering into his life. But you're not God, of course. See? But he's saying, I give you the gift of my will, which enables you then to be in me, and therefore you can pray with me and pray for all of creation, because I'm praying with you. Now, in the Eucharist, is the Lord with us? What's wrong with that? And if Paul said, I live no longer I, but Christ lives in me, what does that mean? See, there's a depth to it that this brings out that we didn't know. See, he takes over. And he does say, I want to be your hands, your feet, your heart, your mind. That's letting me live in you. I continues, with me in my will, each one of these adds to her resplendent glory. This is why she embraces everyone, flows through everyone. We're talking about mediatrix of all graces. Every grace that comes from God comes through her. My beloved mother would never have been able to receive so much glory had not all her actions flowed through my will. These acts rendered her queen and crown of everything, of everyone. Now he explains again why the Trinity made Mary the queen of the divine will. Her first act in her conception was to bind her will, as Jesus said, to the feet of my throne without even wanting to know it. In response, Jesus said, my will bound itself to her, became the center of her life, so much so that between her and us, all relations, communications, were opened. And we entrusted to her every secret. Every secret. This act of laying down her will at the feet of the Trinity was the most beautiful, greatest, the most heroic act of everything. God was so enraptured by this that, quote, he made her queen of all. Jesus uses language that no human being would dare use regarding Our Lady. He said, this queen ruled us, bound us, wrenched infinite graces away from us. Now, such power, influence over God, could only come to Mary because it was the power of our will, Jesus said, within her. He said, at the same time, our will ruled over her. It made her the ruler of God himself. In other words, Our Lady would not ask anything that was not according to his will, but God allows her to take the initiative in the sense that she asks of the Lord. So that when we turn to her and ask something, she brings fantastic answers. But it's always according to God's will because he chooses to allow her to express his will that way. So then, how could we resist so innocent a creature possessed by the power and holiness of our will? That would be to resist ourselves. We discerned in her our divine qualities. The reverberations of the divine attributes flowed upon her like waves. our holiness, our love, our power, and so forth, it was our will within her that attracted all these reverberations of our divine qualities, and which was the crown and defense of the divinity dwelling within her. She never gave life to her human will. Our will was always whole within her. In other words, only God's will, not hers. Once given to God, she never took back, she never made a choice that was her own choice without, in other words, checking it out with the Lord. Is it your will? In our way of thinking, we find this complicated. But her life was so simplified that there was no question of knowing what was God's will. She had the knowledge she needed. And she always gave in. It was a free will, though. But she had all the knowledge she needed to do what God wanted of her. In our case, we don't. See, we don't know what to do in a free hour. We don't get a telegram from the Lord. So we have to think, well, what should I do? What would Jesus think, in other words? Now, Jesus tells us things about Our Lady that no one else could have known. When she was born, she was delighted to hear the angels sing lullabies to her, and her beautiful soul left her body, and with the angels she went around heaven and earth and gathered together all the love that God put throughout creation. She then offered all this love to the Blessed Trinity, and then she said her first thank you on behalf of all creatures. Jesus said, we were so happy on hearing this that we bestowed upon her all the graces and all the gifts so that it exceeded that of all other creatures put together. That's something of what we said earlier, like Pope Pius XI. I believe it's him who said that her holiness was greater than the holiness of all the angels and saints put together in the first moment of her life. And we heard this in an earlier statement. Throwing herself in our arms, she took delight with us, swimming in the sea of happiness and becoming adorned with a new beauty, new light, and new love. Now, during this time, her complete surrender to the divine will, even though an innocent little baby, was a powerful magnet that drew down upon mankind God's mercy and restrained his justice. He said, this is Jesus said, we had the power of our will, which in this innocent little baby held back the arms of our justice, smiled at us from earth, and turned punishment into sweet thank yous and smiles. It also persuaded the Son of God to come sooner to earth than was expected. In the poem, The Man God, we were mentioned that. The scholars all knew that a certain time, and it was within a 70-year period, I believe, and they said that time is up, and then it should have been a later period. But because of Our Lady being chosen as Mother of God at the moment of her birth and up until the time of the marriage with Joseph, she accelerated that time. So in other words, it was through her prayers that the Lord even came more quickly than allowing the prophecies that were predicted before to be carried out. So it persuaded the Son of God to come sooner to earth than was expected. And Jesus ended with this, there is no greater marvel than my dwelling in a creature. In other words, God's indwelling within us. He means not above Our Lady, of course. But in this sense, he's saying about the grace that he gives us and the sanctifying grace that comes to us in baptism in God's life. That, again, is something that we try to explain. Theologians have never been able to fully explain all that what that means. In other words, sharing in God's life. What does all that mean? To what extent do we share, and how do we share that life? See? And to try to put that in other words, it doesn't make us God, and yet we are from Him. Then never forget that. When you, before you were conceived, it's hard to say in that split second, see, at the moment of conception, a soul is created. But what happens? It comes from God, not from your parents. What comes from God is absolutely pure, right? Can't be sinful. But the moment it's in flesh, you have original sin. So then we are part of God in that sense. Isn't that true? So then it's not wrong to say, in other words, we share God's life. See? And we share part of God's nature. But we're not God because we're created. But we share that. We share that. See, we walk in a divine atmosphere, and we have to use symbolic terms. That's why mystical theology is the most abstruse and difficult type of theology. They're describing things that aren't beyond words, so they have to use symbols, like the word circumfusion. Circumfused. The Trinity tried to explain that as circumcision. Each person shares the divine nature. They call that circumcision. The Father shares divinity. The Son shares it. The Holy Spirit. But they're each three persons. And yet we can't fully understand that. If you did, you'd have to be gone. So I can understand that, in fact, what I should have said before we started today was put on your spacesuits. We're going into stratosphere. Have you any questions? I think as often as you read even the Blessed Hannibal de Francia, the priest who has been beatified, who lived this life, published 17 of her books, said, as often as I read, I'm always learning something new. So the reason why the Lord is sharing this with us now is the times are urgent. See, this we're going to have, if we believe the revelations that we consider authentic, in the year 2000 we'll have the new Pentecost. That's when the divine will reign in everybody perfectly. That's what that new Pentecost means. The words of the Our Father will be fulfilled. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, meaning there will be no sin. And you've got to be so full of the Holy Spirit there'll be absolutely no shadow of a sinful thought. Question?
Now that God revealed this to
Louisa,
so is she like next under the Blessed Mother? Like, does she have that many graces as you gave? Like,
we can't say as many graces. Mm-hmm. No, but she's the first human being other than Our Lady who lived in the divine will perfectly. She was so purified. That's why the word, and this is an accusation made by those who don't accept her, that she claims to be the Trinity. The words were used that Louise is part of the Trinity of the three who lived on earth in the divine will, namely Jesus in his humanity, Our Lady in her humanity, and Louisa, but not God. The Trinity is there that they lived in the divine will. See? Yes?
Was she purified from the beginning of her life?
Louisa?
Yeah.
No. No, she went, you have the first volume out there, volume one, is her autobiography. And if you remember, we devoted a whole day to that. And if you remember, her sufferings are beyond any book that I've ever read. I mean, she went beyond the stage St. Jonathan Ross describes. And a year after that, the Lord said, I give you the gift of my will. From that point on, it was in the divine will always. You're bringing up a big question here that we're talking about not only that, but you're also talking about cloning, and that's even more complicated. And well, by nature, when you bring those two elements together, there is a conception. See? Whether it's done in the human way or scientifically, there is a conception. So then we would say there is a soul. But then we're interfering with God's plan. See, that is not permitted, not allowed. At least not the scientists who are going to. They're cloning now, you can be sure of that. But I don't want to get lost in that part of it. Any questions on what we've tried to bring across this morning? I have to say it's very deep. But it doesn't mean it's not true. If we don't understand something, this is a problem, that people who are not informed, they don't have an open mind, when they read some of these things, they say, I don't understand it, therefore it's wrong. Well, that's pride. It's like saying, I have enough knowledge to know who's right and wrong. Do we? No, we don't.
Father, I was surprised when you said Jesus and Mary believed. I thought you were going to say Joseph.
No, that's surprising. It is surprised because it's a gift that the Lord gave, because he said, why are you doing this now? The Lord said, I waited all these centuries to give my gift into my will. Now is the time. That wasn't the time then. That's why. Not even the apostles. According to the information we have here, not even Little Flower or John of the Cross. Remember, though, they attained high sanctity in